looks like a good heater. I said to one person this morning that maybe we should call this meeting off. They said, you're not getting off the hook that easy.
Oh, wonderful. Maybe fix it so the other folks can get it, have it.
Looks. Well, we'll do the best we can, and of course, on weekends, it's impossible to get anything fixed. There's just no one will work. So we have to wait till they get back from Las Vegas before we can get this thing fixed. We have a very interesting subject this morning. And those of you who are acquainted with the tarot cards will remember number 9, the hermit. With a very heavy cloak, he is protecting the light in a little lantern. And this has become a symbol that has been used down through the ages to represent the transmission of the light of truth. At the end of the first chapter in the 1640 edition of Advancement and Proficiency of Learning, Lord Bacon mentions the lamp of tradition. And he calls this lamp the method, which is to be transmitted from generation to generation for the preservation of mankind. Now, all these symbols and interesting sidelines remind us of Lord Bacon's personal philosophy of life. He had the attitude, which is proper, I think, to most philosophical thinkers, that the final proof of the pudding is always in the eating. And that no matter how many theories and how many attitudes and ideas are promulgated, the problem is, do they work? Are they accomplishing the purpose for which they were intended? If they are not, then something is essentially wrong. Bacon occasionally fell into a debate with Aristotle, but he used him on some occasions when needs were in that direction, because he believed definitely that there were three ways of achieving what we might call the state of wisdom, namely through tradition, through observation, and through experimentation. These were the three methods, or the three parts, of the great method of the lamp that must be carried on from generation to generation. There is no way of establishing a truth in its original and basic nature except by an estimation of its consequences. That is true which always results in good. That is doubtful which often results in that which is not good. Any process or formula that ends in frustration is not true, even though it may have the authority of ages. So Bacon took the attitude that you had to use experimentation to verify observation, and that both observation and experimentation were largely involved with the analysis of tradition. We have brought down to us from the past many different systems of thought, many philosophies, arts, and sciences, systems of different kinds. We have created a variety of convictions of our own, things we believe, things we think are true. We do the same with personal affairs of living. We do the things that we believe we should do or we want to do. Now, there is a great division between what we should do and what we want to do. And to tell which is which, finally, it has to be through experimentation. The whole life of the individual is a series of experiments, a series of adventures, we can say, by which a certain conviction is estimated through its consequences. And this is what Bacon was most concerned with. The abstract aspects of things are interesting, but not necessary. That which is necessary is that the individual shall discern the difference between truth and error, that he shall have the courage to live what he knows to be true, and this courage is largely strengthened by certainty, where the individual, rationalizing his own conduct, is convinced that he is working from a basic principle that is correct, has greater strength of character, greater resolution, and greater result than those who are simply trying to find out and have no solid foundation in thoughtfulness. Buddha had much the same idea on this matter, because to him also the primary purpose was that the human being should fulfill the destiny for which he was intended, that mankind must, in the course of ages, come to live according to truth, according to law, according to what was called the doctrine of the Sapienza, or the doctrine of wisdom. So we have here the very interesting problem of the carrying on of the lamp, which is passed from one generation to another. This lamp is knowledge. It is also the tremendous strength and power of tradition. We have all inherited many wonderful things from the past. And these different things give us all kinds of ideas if we use them correctly. We do not perpetuate the past simply because it is past. We do not venerate everything that has gone before. We may have to discard many aspects of knowledge which we have clung to. But in all cases, the past provides the experimentations, the observations, and the reflections upon which we must build. It is useless to say that any generation is a structure in itself with no reference to past or future. All forms of life and knowledge are a stream flowing down through ages of human experimentation. Now, somewhere in the very remote past, for instance, the Phoenicians invented money. Now, that was a major invention. Up to that time, people had to carry the products and bother them. If you wanted a cow, you had to take the cow home and give something in exchange for it, maybe a couple of sheep. Well, this was really rather tedious, especially as the interests of life broadened. So a barter system was established. And the barter system was intended, from all ancient accounts, from the beginning of time, for one purpose only: to simplify exchange. It was to enable the individual to accomplish certain transactions without unwieldy or impossible circumstances. There was never a time in the beginning of the matter when the creation of currency was intended to be the basis of profit in itself. In other words, antiquity did not have the idea, certainly in Sparta there was no such an idea, that money was business in itself. It was a medium of exchange. And as gradually time went on, this medium of exchange, which was necessary, has proven not to be a convenience, but a tremendous inconvenience. It has gradually resulted in the perversion of most human activities, until today we are hopelessly enslaved in what is called the profit system. This was not the intention, but a convenience has become a monster. Now, if going down through the ages, we became aware of this. By the 20th century, the present century, we would have done something about it. We would have corrected the mistake because we would have seen the tragedy all the way down through history, all the way down through human experience and spread out before us in contemporary affairs. But we do nothing about it. Here is a lesson to be learned, and great reluctance on the part of humanity to learn the lesson. We want to keep the problem as it is, The only thing we want to do is to take the unpleasantness out of it. We want to be able to have what we want without causing consequences that are tragic. But Bacon's point of view on this would be very definite. If you find, through the conservative estimates of all peoples, that a certain procedure is dangerous, then you correct it. If you do not correct it, you are not wise, nor strong enough, nor righteous enough to do anything about it. So all kinds of things come along: language, art, music, literature, philosophy, statesmanship, medicine, in which we have received into this generation a great traditional wealth, a wealth by which we should be able to solve most human problems at the present time. But somewhere along the line, something happened in which this descent of knowledge has become more perilous than ignorance. In fact, it has become a highly specialized ignorance that could be fatal to the survival of the human race. Now, this is where we have to take a consideration of the lamp of wisdom. In other words, we have to rescue from this dilemma that we have put ourselves into through the consideration of the endowments of the past, the values of the past, and the experiences through which we have gone for thousands of years. Failure to do this becomes defeat, and defeat in our time is perilous. Now, some will say, and have tried to say, that this is a different generation, that we can do now successfully things that we would have considered bad a few years ago. But Bacon was concerned with the terms good and bad very basically. Anything which in its consequence is not good is bad. Anything by means of which the problems of humanity are complicated, made more dangerous, is not good. Science, for example, has finally handed us nuclear physics. This is not good. All the experimentation, all the tossing about of honors, all the discussion of the great progress we make, all these terms are meaningless if the end product of a certain system or stream of tradition is misery, danger, and cause for continuing anxiety. We have also gradually come, as Bacon points out, to a place where decisions have to be made. What are we here to do? Why are we here in the first place? Is there any reason for us? Or are we simply one of those biological phenomena that exist in nature? Or is there such a thing as a biological experiment in nature? Is everything intended? Is everything lawful, reasonable, organized, and inevitable? Then we are making serious mistakes. Out of the past, as Bacon also pointed out, we have one tremendously valuable heritage, and that is religion. Religion is a science or an art of right and wrong. It is that which tells us what we should do and what we should not do. Now, this religious descent, however, has gradually become complicated. A great deal is included in religion today that is not religious. A great deal is included in theology which has no foundation in basic theological concepts. We have gradually commercialized religion as everything else, and also in the process of so doing have committed one very serious error, and that is we have continued to maintain the structure of theology but have disregarded its moral advice. To Bacon, religion was a system of morality. It was an ethic without which we cannot survive. Therefore, from the whole descent of religion from the earliest time to now, we have a great panorama of man's search for spiritual integrity. We know what has gone before. We know the mistakes that have been made. We recognize the revelations and the revolutions that have arisen in religion. And we say to ourselves, religion is a science for human perfection. Why then is it constantly involved in bickering and, in many instances, violent crime? Why do we commit crimes in the name of religion? Why do we destroy in the name of truth? Why do we deform in the name of beauty? All these things add up to a matter of consideration. And that most of our consideration at the moment deals with that part of our own nature which we are dominated. The human being, the average person, is moved by certain pressures within himself. These pressures are not very strong when he comes into the world, but as he's here longer, the pressures increase within himself and are pressed against him from outside sources of one kind and another. So that gradually what we call education today fits the individual to perpetuate the miseries and misfortunes of the ages. He is taught to do what everyone has done, but he has not been shown that everyone who did it failed. This has been one of the great problems. The belief that many people still gloriously maintain that they are going to be exceptions. Other people are punished for their mistakes, but we won't be. There is a certain interior absoluteness in our own nature which gets in the way of our integrity time and time again. But if we become more thoughtful, if we decide to make what Plotinus called philosophy our journey, then we begin to study these different factors to find out what we are doing to ourselves or for ourselves, and making such decisions as seem advisable. I think one of the most important things that we have to realize, and which may be slowly appearing to us, is that we are not improved by acceptance or rejections alone. We can accept the Bible, but this does not make us religious. It simply provides us with a textbook by which many generations have been benefited, and which also has been used in many cases to harm and injure believers and unbelievers. But we are not good because we accept it. We are not Christians because we are baptized. We are not Buddhists because we live in Asia. These things are secondary and tertiary factors. The main problem, as Bacon points out, is the life of wisdom is not to be perfected by reading good books. It is not by being an Aristotelian or a follower of Nietzsche or Schopenhauer that we become wise. All these systems do not do anything for us unless they are taken into consciousness and used to change conduct. In other words, religion is a matter of conduct. It is a matter of relationships. And we find in time and time again that the religious person does not realize that there is any inconsistency in claiming to be deeply spiritual and at the same time living a life largely based upon selfishness and exploitation. We believe in Christianity, but we lose our tempers. We do not love our neighbors. We do not do good to those who despitefully use us. We are not serving truth or principles. We are belonging to something, but we are not of it. And one of the reasons for this is that religions have not failed man nearly as much as man has failed religions. But here again, we come to the philosophical life as it's expounded by Bacon. The philosophic method is not something that can be merely educated into existence. The individual can go to the university, major in philosophy, take up Baconian studies, and become proficient in all of the phases of the Baconian method, and still will not be a son of wisdom. He will not be a person whose life has changed materially and basically, so far as morality and ethics are concerned. So we find individuals practicing professions and exploiting these professions and still regarding it, this exploitation, as perfectly right and normal. Or, if there is a small qualm of conscience somewhere, it may not be right, but it is inevitable, and unless you do it, you will be a failure. So the problem of trying to reform society and build it into a better pattern depends upon the human being's personal acceptance of the responsibility of right conduct. There is no possible way that political conditions, psychological factors can be adjusted correctly unless integrity rules the relationships of people. They must be right motivated. And selfishness is never basically a right motivation. Now, scientifically speaking, we accept Bacon as one of the founders of science. And what is science? Science is presumably an exact methodology. It is a system of conduct or belief that is based upon constant experimentation and a continual observation of the facts of life. Well, selfishness is not without its obvious evidences. We have a problem, for instance, of integrities. Selfishness has gone on uncorrected from the beginning of time. Now, if we want to find out how to adjust this or change this, we have to recognize selfishness as a scientific problem that must be solved. The individual must learn that selfishness is detrimental. He must learn it more quickly and better, perhaps, than he needs to understand the rotation of planets. He needs much more to the major variations and improvements in personal conduct than he requires a study of the holes in space. It is not those holes out there that are giving us the big trouble. It's the holes between our own ears that are getting into most of the problems that we suffer from. And yet, science will not accept morality as scientific. This is the important point. It can be proven just as completely as the law of gravity. But because the proof is rationalizing rather than merely physical phenomena, it is not accepted. And yet we can prove scientifically what causes the troubles we're in. We can prove scientifically that these causes could be changed, because any problem that we know can be altered. It is ignorance or complete lack of knowledge that makes a problem difficult of solution. But we all know what is wrong. We've known it for a long time. And as long as we endure it, the system of education, the systems of science, all of the moral influences that we have, all the great examples of the past, are inadequate if they do not change the personal conduct of the person alive today. He must in some way find the answer for himself. Now, we have many beautiful books, many great philosophies, many great thoughts to go by. We have all over the world the sacred traditions of those who have lived well. They are the sons of wisdom. They are the bearers of the lamp. The lamp, therefore, is the light of inner truth. It is the light within ourselves which causes us to live according to actual realities. It is the light of inside spiritual soul power. It is that part of our nature which cannot be contaminated, but can simply be left dormant until we do something about it. Now, if we don't do something about these things, what is the result? The continuance of the thing as it is. Only things that are changed can be different. Only when the time comes that the individual takes a positive step in the direction of improving his own character will this character improve. So we now notice a long group of new organizations coming into existence. Organizations which are definitely desirous of assisting the modernization of integrities, that we shall find new ways of doing things better. We have to face these changes, but everywhere we cannot face them with platitudes. We cannot assemble simply in order to hold constructive ideas that are inconsistent with personal conduct. Conduct is the basis of morality and ethics. Conduct is the essential principle behind karma. It is what we do and not what we think about that changes our lives. The hope is that the inside part of ourselves will demand these changes, and that we will come near enough to the evolution of our inner lives that the inner life will begin to dominate external circumstances. Up to the present time, the inner life has been blocked by the appetites of the mortal or material culture. We have sacrificed our own integrity for benefits which are now proving to be very dangerous. So with Bacon, we have this passing on of the lamp, the idea that there has been, since the beginning of time, in this world, groups of people who have known the facts. Various terms have been given to them. Muhammad recalled these people when he spoke of the primordial sages of the world. In various religions, they appear. They represent mysterious, powerful factors that have dominated life. In most cases, these original sages, if we might call them that, have had very quiet lives and sometimes have been bitterly persecuted. The better these people have become, the more they have taught, the more they have sacrificed, the more they have been ridiculed and persecuted. But the fact remains that no amount of ridicule can change a fact, nor make an untruth true. So back in those times where Bacon is talking about the sons of wisdom, there were these sacred mysteries, these schools, these esoteric bodies that existed to perpetuate the inner truths of life. Now, many people are unhappy because these organizations had a tendency to be what we have termed as exclusive. We feel that, many people at least feel, that these organizations have gone on nurturing a few favored persons and allowed the world as itself to go along as it was. That these institutions have not opened themselves to the common needs of the common people. It was the idea that these should be parental organizations that simply descended and took care of the needs of everybody. But such was not possible, and such was not the intent. It was what was hoped would prove to be a permanent motion in society toward which those who were concerned with a better way of life could progress gradually to the understanding of basic principles. If wisdom is bestowed upon those morally unfit, it will become a very serious form of black magic. It becomes a terror and a danger. The more skillful we become, the more dangerous we become, unless we control skill with wisdom, love, and truth. No skill is safe unless the person possessing it is morally integrated. No skill can go along continually serving mankind usefully unless those possessing that skill do not abuse it, do not misuse it, and do not sacrifice the common good for personal profit or advantage. So a profit system has come in by means of which the wisdom of the ages has been tempered down to the point where individuals can benefit materially from rules, principles, and laws that they are supposed to apply to the inner daily life of their conscience and their integrities. So we have all these things as the problems of the day, and we know these problems exist. Now we have five or six very great problems on our hands at the moment. These problems are not new. We've always had them. But congestion and population problems and various advancements in skills have made these problems increasingly dangerous. Until today, nearly every phase of our lives has been exploited. We are constantly lived in the midst of dangers in which our fellow human beings become deadly enemies or very strange monsters of a jungle. This is why we now have to take the first basic step, as Bacon gave it in his passing on of the lamp. The first step is to be capable of using knowledge without abuse. We have to know. We were here to learn. It is our moral privilege and duty to improve ourselves every way that we can. But knowledge must not hold out the bait of self-aggrandizement. We cannot accumulate knowledge primarily for the purpose of profit. And it is true, as it says in the scriptures, that it doesn't profit anyone anything if in the use of things he loses his own soul. Now, the profit system has damaged every art, every science, every trade that we know, and has now become a matter of simple working for a fixed profit, which has nothing to do with character. To attain that profit, we may break homes, we may leave children orphaned, we may start wars that kill off half the population of a country. But these things have nothing to do with growth. They are simply proof of mental and moral sickness. And this continues too long. This sickness spreads like a plague until whole institutions and nations are destroyed. So the profit problem is definitely that the individual must learn to transfer his allegiance from profit to principle. The time was when selfishness wasn't very important because there wasn't much to be selfish about that meant anything. There was little outbreaks of bad disposition, but the average person did not have incentives, did not have examples which led him into great errors. But now it is all different. And we have this very simple thing to face, namely that wisdom has to be mysteriously earned. It has to be brought out of its mystery into the light of ordinary living by means of persons who are dedicated to the transmission of the lamp. They have to be individuals who have outgrown the common faults with which we are all suffering. If we look around now, we see fear developing in many parts of the world. We find a desperate grasping after something better, after a way of life that is more endurable and more purposeful. We also see the mistakes getting bigger and bigger. We see ourselves overshadowed by things we started, but we don't know how to finish. We also realize that behind all of these things, there was selfishness, cupidity, inordinate ambition, and uncontrolled appetites. Well, a human being has to grow up, and the time is coming when if he doesn't grow of his own accord, growth will be thrust upon him by disaster. This is not good to think about, but it is also true that the individual who is right also has a strange and wonderful protection. There is no exaggeration in the biblical concept that many may perish on one side and many on the other, but the just person shall not be moved. And we are beginning to realize that there is a strange kind of internal justice. And at the moment, many groups and individuals all over the world are reaching out to find the formula for this justice, to find out what it is that can bring the individual out of the dilemma and at the same time give him the incentives to a better way of life. This thought is also carried on by Bacon when he turns from the lamp to the New Atlantis. the New Atlantis is a symbol of a commonwealth based much upon Moore, André, and many others, but a symbol of a world properly governed, a world in which there will always be room for everyone, where overpopulation will not exist, where crime will be reduced to a minimum, and where an individual will be honored for his integrities rather than his possessions. Also, we find constant temptations, most of them arising from the profit concept. Nearly every major fault we have today has been exaggerated because it was financially advantageous to somebody. And gradually, finances have taken over. And I remember the little fable that I find in Stanley's History of Philosophy, where someone was talking with a philosopher, and he said, "Why is it that great wealthy people feed the hungry and the poor and the sick, but never do anything to help the wise?" And Plato replied, "It's very simple. They're all afraid they may be sick and hungry someday themselves, but they are not afraid that they will be wise." And this is more or less the problem that we have. Today we have everything necessary except the proper motives, the proper incentives. We have a religion that teaches the brotherhood of human beings and very little brotherhood. We have a religion that teaches us to love God and serve our fellow man. In both cases, the practice is inadequate. So gradually, we are being forced by time and by nature to discover that the things that we are trying to do will not work and are not worth the price. We must learn that we are saving the wrong things, that we are not doing that which is going to permanently improve ourselves or anyone else. We are simply signing our own death warrants. This gradually comes into focus. Now, the difficulty is not so terrible. It's amazing to realize that the solution is not in the skies or in the stars or in anything else. The solution is in the common sense of personal living. It's here. It always has been here. It's a very common thing. We find good homes, and we admire them. The parents are good people. The children grow up in a good environment. It's very wonderful. But no one really seems to say this must be the way it must be done. These people are exceptions. They're honored, but not emulated. And as a result of that, in many homes, selfish parents are neglecting their children. Badly raised children are becoming potential dangers to the environment. And everything goes along as it is. Why? Usually because of financial advantage. Usually because someone wants more luxuries, more privileges, and more liberties, but not more insights. This goes along in every walk of life. Great corporations are folding up every day. Nations are going bankrupt. Sickness is widespread. We are in worse condition now in many ways than we have been in a very long time. But nobody thinks of doing anything to get to the source of it. We're going to elect somebody else, but we're not going to do what they suggest, if they suggest right. And if they don't suggest right, there was no use electing them in the first place. But we are not making the personal changes. We are not forgiving our enemies. We're not getting over family grievances. We are still hating this and despising that. We still have some kind of a parade every time anyone makes an effort to do something. We live in a state of constant objection. Not every change is objectionable because it hazards our little private way of trying to achieve wealth. If it interferes with doing exactly as we please, it is criminal. But what we are going to find someday is that nature is going to step in and tell us we cannot do exactly what we please. We can't make mistake after mistake, forget about it, deny it, or try to prove it's right when we know it's wrong. We are in a condition now where we have to begin to change these patterns. Now, to Bacon, these changes were not just philosophical. They were scientific. The changes that we must make are just as real as the law of gravity. They're just as factual as any physical scientific institution can produce. They are facts that are proven to us in the great laboratory of the world, the laboratory that has been carrying on its experiments for more than 10,000 years of recorded history. The great laboratory is the world, and the proof of what is being done is the result it has upon the world. And the world now being in poor condition is a proof that the method is not correct. So Bacon decided and definitely made possible a realization of the method. The method by means of which we can solve our problems. The method is very simple. Do not do that which is hurtful to anything. Do not live for your own personal profit alone. Do not live for your own satisfaction alone. We have now a series of problems. Narcotics, alcohol, to be two, and they are two powerful ones. And yet many of the people that are suffering from these ailments do not want to change. They have the inalienable right to destroy themselves if they want to. Now, this is something that cannot necessarily be equated in terms of law, order, imprisonment, judgment, and these things. The problems are definitely that the human being has an inalienable right, he feels, to do as he pleases. And he has not yet learned that if he does what he pleases without correcting his mistakes, he is going to end in absolute abject misery. So it becomes time to look into the causes of the thing. And Bacon found out a long time ago that the cause of the whole thing is something inside of the human being, which we call egoism or egotism. It is the irresistible desire to do exactly what we please. That when we want to hate, we will hate. When we want to fight, we will fight. And when someone else sells us the deal of fighting because they want to take over a country, we will help them do it. These things are part of an uncontrollable determination to make the mistakes we want to make. I know I've worked with a good many alcoholics along the way, and most of them have come to the point where to have a drink is more important than to live. And they are perfectly willing to die, usually with delirium tremens or some other unpleasant symptoms, rather than change. And in the narcotics problems today, we find that the cocaine, for example, that those who use it say that while they have a high, they are 10 feet high. They rule the world. They can do everything. And when they are not under the influence of the narcotic, they can't live with themselves or anybody else. They are suddenly helpless people, too small for the world in which they live. So they take narcotics in order to feel great. Well, it would also seem as though this is pretty obvious, that something is basically wrong. Now, we have many people who are trying to do something about it, but they've run against another problem, namely that narcotics are profitable, and profit is the final determination. If it is a cause of wealth for someone, there is always someone who wants to make that wealth, even if it's over the bodies of the dead he has killed. So this is the funny place, a sad place, a tragic place, where we are now. Yet in the presence of this, we have more assets than any time in the history of the world. We have tremendous potentials. There's hardly anything that needs doing that we can't do. The only difficulty is we just don't want to interfere with the smug little way we have to live. The individual is afraid of losing its job. If the present condition goes along as it is now, everyone will lose their job. Nature is trying to tell us something. Nature is a very patient parent. It is seeking desperately to make us realize that this world, this universe, is ruled by law and order. That the laws of nature cannot be violated by man with impunity. That when we go against nature, we go against survival. And that there is no amount of bribery by means of which we can bribe natural law. And all efforts to change it for our own advantage, without outgrowing our disadvantages, all such efforts are fruitless.